Okay, we're closer to the bottom of the page. We're on page 1036. We're middle of the laws about witnesses. So the Torah says, from just reviewing a little bit from 2 weeks ago, that the Torah says one witness cannot extract money, one witness cannot get you punished, two witnesses do that, one witness can only extract a vow, an oath, like we said, in certain cases, that one, if you testify against the witness, so then you have to swear. Now, if you testify against the witnesses, but you can't swear because you're not really going against the witness, so then you have to pay instead. We also discussed what the pasuk says, based on the testimony of two or three witnesses, something that the Gemara asks, if it's two, then if two is good, three is for sure good. And we learned the various dinim that, that number one, if part of the testimony is no good, all of it is no good, all the various different dinim that we discussed, why the Torah says two and three. Basically, the main thing is that if two, and if what, just like two, if one of them is no good, all three are no good. The same thing, if one of the three is no good, all the testimony is no good. Okay, then we started getting into Edom Zayman. That's what we're up to now. Okay, let's start four lines from the end of the page. Pasuk Tezayin, Pasuk 16. Okay? Ki Yokim Eid Chomas Be'ish, if a false witness stands up against a man to speak up against him, Lani is Be'isar, which is not true, because he's a false witness. V'amdu Shnei Anoshim Asher Lahem Ariv Lefnei Hashem. So the two litigants that, I'm sorry, it does not refer to the litigants. The two witnesses stand up, lefnei hakeinim v'asheftim, asher yiyu b'yomim mehem, which will be in those days. Now, the Gemara says like this, ba'am d'shnei anoshim refers to the two witnesses. Asher lehem, simply, without Rashi, and without the Gemara, you learn like this, the two people that have the fight should stand in front of the Beis Din. But the Gemara says no. V'amdu shnei anoshim, the Gemara says it's speaking about witnesses. And from here we learn out that women are not kosher to testify. Only men. It says v'amdu shnei. Thank God. For everybody. Another thing, by the way, what the Gemara learns out from this pasuk, the fact that it says v'amdu shnei anoshim, they have to stand. Which means witnesses are not allowed to testify sitting down. The Gemara says in later generations, they allowed already today for witnesses to testify sitting down. But in the time of the Gemara, for instance, before the Gemara, the Torah says, Kaliva amdu shnei anoshim, the witnesses have to stand. And again, it's a cause of like all the other things. Okay? Lefnei ha-keinim ha-sheftim, in front of the keinim and the sheftim, okay, so Rashi says, why does the Torah use the word lifnei Hashem? They're not standing before God. They're standing in the presence of Beis Din. But it says, and that's why another reason why it called a judge in Parshas Mishpatim is called Elokim lo sekalel, means you cannot curse a judge. Because a judge is, so it says why. So Rashi says, interesting thing. When a person comes to litigate, page 1036, closer to the bottom of the page. When two litigants, or anybody stands in front of a judge, the Gemara says, and Rashi brings it down, it has to appear to you as if you're standing in the presence of God. Because, in fact, there's a pasuk that Rashi quotes, Bekerev Elokim Yishpet, in the presence of God is judgment. So the Torah says a few things over here. Number one, the Torah says it has to be two witnesses. It has to be anoshim, men, not women. It has to be va'amdu, witnesses have to stand. And they should understand that they're doing lifnei Hashem. Lifnei ha-keinim ha-sheftim, in front of the judges, and the keinim and the judges, ha-sheyiyo ba-yomim ha-heim, that will be in those days. So the Gemara asks a very simple question. What do you think? You can go to judges that are dead already. The pasuk says, you should stand, 1036 at the bottom. It says, you need to stand in the presence of the judges that will be in those days. So Gemara says, what do you think? You're going to go to judges that are not in those days. So Rashi quotes just the second half of the Gemara. So Rashi says, what it means is, Yiftach b'deire k'shmo b'deire. There was a Shmuel Anavi, who had a Bezdin. There was this guy Yiftach. Yiftach HaGiladi. Because there was no other leader, he was the greatest of the worst, so he became a Jewish leader. The whole after Yiftach HaGiladi, the whole story with Yiftach. So it says, somebody could think, this generation has a Yiftach, who is he? So Gemara says, if he's the judge of your days, you have to respect him, just like you respected Moshe Rabbeinu, just like you respected Shmuel HaNavi, just like you respected any of the other people, because that's why the Torah is adding, Asher Yir Bayom HaMahim, even though he's in these days, not earlier generation, but if this is who you have, this is who you have to respect. As if, like it says, Kishmuel B'dayit Tzorech Ato Linig B'Kovid. Rashi quotes from the Gemara that you have to have respect for the judge. Okay?
You mean if he's a boy?
No, we're talking, well, first of all, you have to respect the non-Jewish judge also. But here we're talking about the Bezdin system. It's all about Bezdin. You have to respect the judges. Even if they rule against you. If they rule for you, the Torah doesn't have to tell us to respect them. Of course you're going to respect them. The Torah says even if they rule against you. Okay, then the pasuk says like this. The bottom line of 1036. V'darshu ha-sheftim heitiv, the judges have to check, inquire thoroughly. Meaning, you need chikir odrisha, you have to check them out and ask them various different questions and make sure they know what they're talking about. But the Torah says, what happens when the judges check him out? V'hine eit sheker ha'ed, the witness is false. Sheker ona ba'ochid, he lied against his fellow Jew. In other words, Bezdin started checking out the witnesses, and they find that they're liars. And by the way, it's interesting. The Torah says, eid sheker ha'ed, but the Gemara says, at the beginning of Pasuk Tezvav, like six lines before, the Torah says, lo yokum eid echad b'ish. One witness cannot testify, you know, in punishment or... So the Gemara asks the question, eid is singular. Eidim is plural. Eid, by definition, means one. Why does the Torah say eid echad? Eid, by definition, means one. If it's plural, it would say eidim. So the Gemara says a very interesting halacha. From here you learn out that any time the Torah uses the word eid, it means two, unless if the Torah explicitly says one. Because that's what the Torah says, eid echad. Because eid itself would mean two. So the Torah has to say, in this case, eid echad means one. So therefore, when it says, v'inei eid sheker ha'eid, okay, Rashi quotes again from the Gemara in Sanhedrin, that eid sheker, I mean both of them, sheker ana ba'achir. Now we'll explain to you why this is very important. Okay? By the way, there's another interesting thing the Mefarshim say over here. Before it says, Akreinim ha-sheftim, and now it says, V'darshu ha-sheftim heitiv. What happened to the Kayanim? The puzzle before says, you have come before Kainim HaShaftim, which means the Kainim are supposed to be part of the Bezdin, and then the next puzzle right away says the Shaftim. So it's a very interesting thing. It says, in order for a judge to paskin, he cannot do it through supernatural ways. Like a Kain couldn't ask the Urim V'Tumim what the halacha would be. They would have to do it from a logical perspective. And this is also a general idea in halacha. It says in Kabbalah that when you have an argument between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, it says Beis Hillel most of the time was lenient. And Beis Shammai most of the time was stricter. There's a whole parak of Mishnayis in Idiyas that says, a whole parak says, all the halachas where Beis Shammai is lenient and Beis Hillel is machmir. Okay? But besides that, normally the rule in Gemara, Beis Hillel was lenient and Beis Shammai was strict. So it says in Kabbalah, why? Why was it like that? So it says, Beis Hillel's neshamis came from the attribute of chesed. Beis Shammai's neshamis came from the attribute of gvura. And therefore, Beis Shammai was strict, like even Shammai and Hillel says, Shammai came from gvura. That's why, you know, the guy came to convert, he hit him with the stick and threw him out, and then the Hillel brought him in. So Hillel came from, and therefore Beis Hillel, their neshamis were from chesed. Beis Shammai's neshamis were from gvura. But because, as we know from Sfirah Sa'im and Kedusha, there's gvura in chesed and chesed in gvura. So even though primarily Beis Hillel was chesed, but they also had gvura. Gvura sheba chesed. Therefore sometimes they were strict. Beis Shammai was gvura, they're most of the time they're strict, but sometimes they were lenient because of chesed sheba gvura. So this is what it says in Kabbalah. So it's, Chassidus in Kabbalah asked the question, but Torah lo b'shamayim hi. The pasuk over here says, you need to understand the psak halacha. You can't say because my neshama comes from chesed, kosher, kutar, mutar, you know, you're allowed to do it. You can't be that. So it says, the answer is very interesting, which applies here too. Beis Hillel didn't just rule because the neshama came from chesed. Beis Hillel understood the ruling in their seichel of Torah. But because their neshama came from chesed, they were leaning in that direction. But it's not that the stam chesed is kosher. Because they were chesed, their mind was leaning, so to speak, but they understood that loch in their physical brain. And therefore the Torah over here says, v'dorsho sheftim heitiv, which means you have to do it with your logic to understand it, because otherwise you're not allowed to do it. And therefore we learned in the Gemara, when the Gemara share, that in capital punishment, they started, you needed a bezdin minimum of 23 to give capital punishment. The big bezdin was 71. But a bezdin to give capital punishment needed 23. So when they debated the thing, and then they took the vote. So, they had, in the 23, you had the greater people, and the lesser greater people, and the lesser greater people. When it came to capital punishment, who did you begin the count from? In monetary law, you began from the oldest, I mean, I don't mean oldest in age, the most respected judge. He said his opinion first, and everybody else said their opinions. In three, like, when it came to capital punishment, the Gemara says, "Peisachim in atzad." You start from the lowest of the judges to hear his opinion, and then you moved all the way up. Why? Because if the in capital punishment, which is important, so to speak, really important, if you started from the oldest, most respected judge, and he says his opinion, the younger people are going to be swayed and affected by what he said. They're going to think, right, he knows how to learn better than me. He's greater than me. He's probably right. So even though I maintain different, but he's probably right, I'm going to agree with him. And then you don't have what the Torah says, the real opinion of each judge. See, the oldest guy couldn't care less what the younger guy say. He's not going to become swayed by what they say, because he's smarter, he has his opinion. But the younger ones, the less smart ones, are going to be more swayed by the older one. So therefore, you start from the younger one. What does all this bring out? That when judges make a ruling, it has to be that they understand it. It has to come in there. That's why it said, v'dosho sheftim heitiv. They need to understand what's going on. But here, okay, the top of 1038. Vine ate sheker ha'ed, and then they found out that this witness is testifying, the two witnesses, by the way, are testifying falsely. Sheker ana ba'achiv, he's testifying falsely against his brother. Now, 2 weeks ago when we were learning this, well not this, before, we learned there's two types of Eidim. Just to review it, because this is what the Torah is talking about now. There's Eidim hakhasha, and Eidi Zaymimin. Eidi HaKhosha means contradictory witnesses. Eidim Zaymimin is a different category. What does this mean? I'll explain this right now. Hakosha says they argue against one set of witnesses, one set of witnesses, yeah? One pair of witnesses says, Reuven killed Shimon. Okay, that's what they're testifying. Another group of witnesses say, no, Reuven didn't kill Shimon, Levi killed Shimon. Okay? One group says, A killed B, and the other group says, no, C killed B. And you check out the witnesses, and you don't find anybody lying. They both sound as if they know what they're talking about. What's the halacha then? Halacha says they cancel each other out. Okay, so you have no testimony. There's no witnesses on anything. So Reuven cannot get killed. Levi cannot get killed because we have no witnesses who killed them. Because Reuven, the first group, say Reuven did it. The second group say Levi did it. They cancel each other out. There's no witnesses. Two people say you owe him $1,000. Two witnesses say you don't owe him $1,000. They cancel each other out. You don't believe them. That's it. There's no witnesses. Okay? Eidim Zeimimin is different. This we learned last week a little bit. Eidim Zeimimin means like this. Two witnesses come and they testify that Reuven killed Shimon Sunday morning at 10 o'clock in LA. Comes another two witnesses and say that's not true. Not because Reuven didn't, we don't know if Reuven killed Shimon or not. But they say to the first two witnesses, how could you two testify that you saw Reuven kill Shimon Sunday morning in LA? Sunday morning you were with us in New York. We don't know if Reuven killed Shimon. They're not contradicting the testimony that the one witness said Reuven killed him and the other one said no, Levi killed him. Here they're testifying against the witnesses themselves, not against what the witnesses are testifying about. Okay, so the second pair of witnesses come and say, how could you two testify that you saw him kill him in LA? That time you were with us in Hawaii or New York or whatever. What happens then? That's what the Torah is going to be talking now. Because you testify that the witnesses are liars, you do to them what they wanted to do to the guy they testified against. Why do you believe the second group over the first group? Simply, it's what's called gzeira sakosuv, illogical. This is what the Torah says. Another reason is because in the first case, they say Reuven killed him. The other group says Levi killed him. You're not testifying against the witnesses. You're testifying against what they testified about. Here you're testifying against the witnesses. So you believe the second group over the first group. And by the way, if the third group comes and says to the second group, how could you testify that he was with you in New York, you were with us in China? And this keeps going, it could keep going, and you always believe the last group of witnesses. And then the pasuk says, Vasisim Lai, Lai again is, even though it's singular, but it means to both sets of witnesses, Kashezamam Lasis Lachim, what they wanted to do to their friend, Ubiarta Haram Mikibecha, and you'll destroy the evil from your midst. Okay, so the Torah says like this. And by the way, because we said Eid means two, Loi means two, Loi here to him. And the din is, Eidim Zeimimin is only Eidim Zeimimin if you make them both Eidim Zeimimin. In other words, let's say A and B testify Reuven killed Shimon Sunday morning in LA. Yeah, so Adam Zim is two other witnesses come and say, how could you A and B testify what you saw? You were with us. Yeah? What happens if they only testify against A? A and B testified Reuven killed Shimon. Right? Two other witnesses come and say, how can you A B, you weren't with us. We don't know. But you, A, you're with us in New York. So then they don't have a din of Edim Zaymimin. Because these two became one group, you have to do Azama and both of them together to have this din, Kasher Zama Mlasis La'achiv. To punish them, what they wanted to do to the guy they testified against, can only happen if you do both. Or if there's three witnesses, until you do it to all three. And that's the only way you could undo them in a way that you punish them. Okay? Now, there's another interesting concept over here. In halacha, I'm saying. What happens if two witnesses say, the first case, not Edom Zaymim, what's called Hachosha. Two witnesses say Reuven killed Shimon. Two other witnesses say Levi killed Shimon. Right? So they cancel each other out. Yes? Now, one of the groups is lying. Correct? One of them is lying. Because Reuven and Levi didn't kill him. You're testifying Reuven killed him. You two are testifying Levi killed him. Right? So they canceled each other out because we have no aid. The question is like this. Are one of those two groups liars? Obviously, one group is lying. How could they testify Reuven killed him when the other guys say Levi killed him? So somebody's lying. Either Reuven killed him or Levi killed him. Two witnesses say Reuven killed him. Two witnesses say Levi killed him. So one of them is liars. Yeah? Now, the question is, if this group come and testify in a different case, do we believe them or not?
Yes.
Yes. Why? Because not proven liar. Maybe the other case were liars. Right? When the other case, that the other group comes, again, they were not proven liars yet. Right? Maybe the other group lied. Not this group. But, halacha says an interesting thing. If one witness from one group and one witness from the other group come to testify together, then they're, one of them's for sure a liar. Right?
In a different case.
In a different case.
No, they may not be lying at that testimony, but they're just having error.
No, they're huchse kafran. They're proven liars. One of them lied. So when two come and two come separately, right, then you look at this group. Were they proven liars yet? No. Maybe it's the other group. When this group comes to testify in another case, you look at them. Were they proven liars yet? No. Maybe the other guy was lying. But one comes from one group and one comes from another group. According to Allah, they cannot be two witnesses.
Maybe the other two were liars.
Yeah, but here's one group, one guy from each group.
Yeah, but each one had a partner.
Right.
So maybe the other...
No, they're both testifying.
They both testified at the same time.
Both testified. They check out both witnesses. One group says, Group A says, Reuven killed Shimon. Correct? Group B says, Levi killed Shimon. Mm-hmm. Now both, all four are testifying. Right?
Yeah.
So one group is for sure a liar. Correct? One group is for sure lying. But when you look at each group individually, you trust them because they're not proven to be liars yet. But if one guy comes from group A and one guy comes from group B to testify together in another case, then one of them for sure is a liar. It's a very interesting halacha. We once learned it in a different din. There's two roads. I learned this in the Gemara a bunch of times. There's two roads. Okay? Road A and road B. One road has a dead body on it, and we don't know which one it is. We don't know if it's A or B. We just know between A and B, one road has a dead body. Which means if you go on that road, you're tummy. Right? Okay. Now, two people, one guy walked on row A, and one guy walked on road B. Practically speaking, one of them for sure is tummy. Correct?
Yes.
Okay. But the din is like this. If the first guy comes to Beis Din and says, listen, I walked on road A, but we don't know if there's a dead body there. Am I tummy or not? Beis Din says, you're tahor. Now the second guy comes to Beis Din and says, I went on road B, and I don't know if the tumma was on road A or road B. Beis Din says, you're also tahor. One of them is for sure tummy. One of them is for sure tummy. But when they come individually, you look at each one individually. It's a doubt. A doubtful tumma in a public domain, Rishus Rabbim, is pure. You're tahor. Now you. But if they come together, to Beis Din, they're both tummy. Because, see, when they come separately, you look at each one individually. And you're a doubt. The din is, a doubtful tumma in Rishus HaRabim, in the public domain, is tahor, is pure. By the way, I'll tell you a little secret. You have this in your kitchen also. Let's say one of your forks became treif. Yeah, you have 10 forks. One of your forks became treif. Yeah? And now, they got mixed back up with all the others. You put it aside to kosher it, and let's blame the housekeeper came, or the husband, he usually wants to blame, came and put it back in together with the rest of the forks. Yep. One fork is definitely treif, correct? Mm-hmm. Now, am I allowed to use those forks?
Yes.
Why?
Because it's a majority.
Because you're a rabbi. Because, now, there's a thing like this. We go by the majority, right? If 10 forks are kosher, right, and I take one fork out, the majority of forks are kosher or treif? Kosher. So I could take it and use it. Next fork, majority of... But now the question is, can I use all 10 at the same time, or can I only use 9? The din shechunor, by the way. We learn it for smicha. So the din is, believe it or not, the halach is, it's an argument, the halach is, you can use all 10. One is for sure treif, but each one that you're looking at, individually, is from the majority, which is kosher.
What's the ratio? Like 1 to 3 cannot
be? No, 1 to 2. It's nullified what majority.
Has to be...
No, if you have one fifth, you have to have 3 forks. Let's say you have 2 forks, and one fork is treif, but you have only 2 forks, so there's no nullification in majority. So then you can't use either of them. You have to kosher both of them. But if you have, let's say, 3 forks, and one became treif, so you have 2 kosher ones. 2 kosher ones versus 1 non-kosher one.
That is enough to... Acceptable.
Yeah, majority. The Torah says you go by the majority. So in that case, it would be good. But the halacha is you can use all 10. Anyway, coming back to here. So, 2 witnesses say Reuven killed Shimon. 2 witnesses say Levi killed Shimon. Because they canceled each other out, there's no testimony. But one group is for sure lying. But we don't know which group lied. Because the Torah said they just canceled each other out. If they cancel each other out, each group can testify in any case they want. But one guy from group A, one guy from group B, together cannot testify because one for the sure is a liar. But now the Torah is speaking about Edom Zoymimin. When you're not arguing against the fact that happened, you're saying, how can you guys testify when you're with us? So the Torah says you do to them what they wanted to do to the guy. Which means... They wanted to kill him, you kill him. They wanted to extract money, they have to pay the money. But that's the interesting point of like this. When you kill the 2 witnesses, yeah, both witnesses get killed. These 2 witnesses said Reuven killed Shimon. So they're testifying Reuven should get killed, correct? So you kill both witnesses. Yeah, you have to kill both witnesses. What happens if the same case happened with money?
Why do you kill the witnesses?
That's what the Torah says. The witnesses that lied. Because they wanted to kill. So now the question is, when, let's see, it's money. So money, the din is, let's say it's $1,000. Each witness doesn't pay $1,000. Each witness just pays $500 each. They wanted to make the guy pay $1,000 illegally, so they don't pay $1,000 each. They have to pay $1,000. But you can't kill a half a guy, so to speak. So you kill him, by then you kill them both. Or what happens if it's not possible to do to them what they wanted to do to the guy? What? Like they testified that the guy's not a kosher Kohen. Two people testified that he's a son of a divorcee and therefore he's not a kosher Kohen. Right? Now, what are you going to do to them? They're not Kohenim anyway. What are you going to do to make them non-Kohenim? So then they get lashes, 49 lashes. But this is something we also mentioned last week, we didn't get into it properly. The Torah says the top line at 10:38, you only do to them what they wanted to do. And the Gemara learns that if they already killed him, if Reuven was killed, you don't do anything to the witnesses. That's the halach, you don't do anything to the witnesses. So the question is, that doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. Okay? If the guy got killed, meaning, two witnesses says Reuven killed Shimon. Bezdin kills Reuven. Then you don't do anything to the witnesses. If they're proven false. But if Reuven wasn't killed yet, and they wanted Reuven to get killed, so then you kill them. It doesn't make sense. Right? The Mamash doesn't make sense. So the Ramban, Rabbeinu Bechaya, explained it very, we mentioned it very briefly last week to explain it now properly. The Ramban, Rabbeinu Bechaya explained the logic as follows. And this is with the premise that we said before, that when judges are judging, God is present. Bekerev Elokim Yishpot, when judges judge, the proper judges, God is present. God would never allow an innocent person to die by court.
Hashem wouldn't.
Hashem would never allow a court, which is a proper court, to kill an innocent person.
What about the innocent person getting punished? Would he allow that?
No. Not from the court.
Right. So no matter what, it's not just
the court. Case. Right. But I'm saying the courts. If it's a proper, we're talking about a proper court, the courts in the olden days with the great holy rabbis, they would not, God would, Hashem would not allow a bezdin, that God is present in the judgment, so to speak, to punish somebody innocently or to kill somebody innocently. Okay? Therefore, we say that if bezdin killed Reuven, based on the testimony of these witnesses, even though it ended up that they were liars, so there's no testimony that Reuven killed Shimon, right? So why is Reuven getting killed? We must say, Torah says, that that person was supposed to die anyway for sins. But he was never caught. Bezdin will not kill an innocent person. If this innocent, so to speak, innocent person got killed by Bezdin, it's because that guy was guilty for something. Maybe not this case, maybe a different case, but he definitely was guilty. So therefore you can't kill the original Adam because the fact was that guy was supposed to die. But if Bezdin didn't kill the guy, they testified that Bezdin should kill the guy, but Bezdin didn't kill him yet, that means they wanted to kill an innocent person. You kill them for wanting to kill an innocent person. But if Bezdin killed the guy already, he's not an innocent person. So they didn't want to kill an innocent person, because the fact that Bezdin killed him is because he was a guilty person. The same thing with the punishment of money, whatever it is. Hashem doesn't allow a Bezdin to do punishment to the innocent or killing the innocent or whatever it may be. So if Bezdin killed a guy, he wasn't innocent. And therefore the two witnesses didn't want to kill an innocent person. That guy was guilty. How do we know he's guilty? The proof is Bezdin killed him. But if Bezdin didn't kill him yet, and these two guys are testifying that Bezdin should kill him, so now they want to kill an innocent person, you kill them first. They're testifying. Okay. You have to get rid of the evil from your midst. Okay? And then the Torah says like this. Vanisharim yishmo v'yiro, all the leftover people should see it and hear it, and therefore the din is, the halacha is, you don't kill him only on the Yom Tif, when everybody comes to Eretz Yisrael. And not only that, Rashi quotes in the Gemara, you announce publicly that these two people were killed because they lied in the testimony they were Edim Zeimim. That nobody should ever do such a terrible thing in your midst. Don't have any pity on this guy, on the Edim Zeimimin. Nefesh ben nefesh, eye for an eye, eye by eye, I mean soul for a soul, eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, yad by yad, hand for hand, regel by regel, foot for foot. And again, it doesn't mean literally, many religions take this psukim literally. Eye for eye, you know, hand for hand, but Torah says it means money. And that's what Torah Shebaal Peh learns, that it means money. Doesn't mean literally, it means eye by eye for an eye means you have to pay the value of the eye or the foot or the tooth or whatever it may be. Okay, that ends the witness's story.
Thank God for that.
Huh?
Thank God for that. It's so complicated.
What's so complicated? Two men, that's it. Keep in mind, only men, no, what else you need to know? That's all you need to know. But we said last week, 2 weeks ago. But women are believed. Eid Echad, Nemen B'Yisurin. By Isser and Hetter, we said last week. By Kol Shetrei, for things like that, if it's not monetary laws, it's not capital punishment, so then they are believed. And to make something kosher or not kosher, whatever. Like you said, how can you eat in your house? Because your wife is basically, they're saying it's kosher. Or whatever. And the laws of Nida, I mean, she's believed. All the cases of Isser and Hetter, she's believed. Okay. Kiseite lemocham alivecha, perchof. When you go out to battle against your enemy, but at Eitzen you will see suits, verechav, horses and chariots, am rav mimcha, tremendously great, more numerous people than you. They see them, mayhem, do not fear them. Ki Hashem elakecha imach, this God is with you, hamalchum eretz Mitzrayim took you out of Egypt. Meaning if God can take you out of Egypt, for sure, he could do this. But it's interesting, Rashi quotes in the Medrash, it says here, Am Rav Mimcha, meaning, as far as you're concerned, they're more. That's as far as I'm concerned, they're not more people. As far as you're concerned, there's much more people. So he says, but there's a very interesting lesson over here. Number one, a few things. By the way, Rashi says, what's the connection between ayin ba'ayin, nefesh b'nefesh, you know, limb to, what?
He just said, we kill the Edim Zaymim if they prove that they said lie. But here you said that you don't take the pasuk literally, nefesh b'nefesh. It means,
well, that's Torah Shebaal Peh. Torah Shebaal Peh says that's what it means.
Okay, but we just said we kill them.
Yeah, but it doesn't have to
only the first part of the...
Yeah, but I'm saying, what happens if they said that two witnesses testified that they chopped off somebody's hand? That's what they testified. Right? So now, let's go back. If somebody, God forbid, chops off somebody's hand, what do you do to him?
Pays money.
It was called Nezek, Tzar, Ripa, Shavas, Bosh, the five monetary compensations that you have to pay. Okay? Now, for instance, what's Nezek? How much is a hand worth? It's valueless, I mean, right? So the Gemara says very simple. It sounds a little corrupt, but how much a person is sold as a slave with two hands, and how much will be sold as a slave with one hand, and that difference is what you have to pay him. Then you have pain, and then you have doctor bills and compensation, workers' comp, and embarrassment to five. Okay, now, you don't chop off his hand. Even though in Parshas Mishpatim, in Shmos, when the Torah speaks about it, the Torah says, ayin ba'ayin, shein b'shein, yod b'yod, which simply implies, a guy chops off somebody's hand, you chop off his hand, like they do in Saudi Arabia, what they still do it today, right? You chop off the guy's hand. The Torah says, no. It doesn't mean chop off his hand. The Chum learned Torah Shabbal Peh, you have to pay damages. Okay. Now, what happens, two witnesses say, that we saw Reuven chop off Shimon's hand Sunday morning in L.A. Okay? Then two witnesses come and say, how could you testify you saw him chop off his hand? You were with us in China. Okay? Now, what do you do to the Edom Zayim? You don't chop off their hands. Because all they wanted to do to the guy anyway is make him pay. So that's what Torah says here. You don't chop off his hand, because the first guy doesn't get his hand chopped off. So therefore, ayin b'ayin, the Gemara says, it means monetary compensation.
So why not in the case after the nefesh b'nefesh?
If they wanted to kill the guy, then you kill him.
Why not pay his money?
What's the difference? Oh, because the Torah says, because if you kill somebody, you kill him. If Reuven kills Shimon, then Reuven gets killed. So what did they want to do to Reuven? Get him killed. So then you kill them. If they wanted to make him pay money, so then you make him pay money. But he can't, it doesn't mean literally because
here it says nefesh b'nefesh, but they say,
whether it's killing the guy or charging him money, that's what it means. Okay, now, when a person goes to war, and we see in the next few psukim, also, I mean, the pep talk they got. First of all, according to grammar, the Torah should have said, Ki seisei lamochama im eivecha, with your enemy. Al eivecha means on your enemy. You don't go to war on your enemy. You go to war with your enemy. So it should be neged eivecha, im eivecha, but not al eivecha. So it says in the Mefarshim explain, when a Jew goes to battle, the attitude has to be, we won. That we're going to, on top of them, we're going to kill them. You know, you have this in sports also, before the game, all the cheerleaders are screaming already that they won the game. Yeah? Or a victory, march of victory. Before you go to war, there's a victory march. Mm-hmm. Because the attitude in war is extremely, extremely important. So the Torah says, "Ki seisei lamochama al eivecha." When you go to war, your attitude has to be al eivecha. I'm going to conquer the enemy. I'm going to be on top of them. I'm going to kill them. And a person could think there's an abundance of horses and chariots is much stronger than us. The Torah says, "Don't be afraid, because God is with you that took you out of Egypt." Okay. Therefore, the Torah says, the Pepto basically says, "Go with spirit, because Hashem is with you." In a spiritual sense, like everything in Torah is spiritual, he says that the Muhammad Ali Vecha refers to the Yetzer Hara. Yetzer Hara is your enemy. Okay, that's the Eva, the Gemara says, the enemy of the Jew. When you go to fight the Yetzer Hara, your attitude has to be, I can conquer the Yetzer Hara. Why can I conquer the Yetzer Hara? Because God is with me. What does it mean? The Gemara says, every day, Tseifa Rosh HaLatzadik, Umevakish LaMisei. The Gemara says, every day, the Rasha, meaning the Yetzer Hara, looks out for the Tzaddik and wants to kill him. V'lmalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ezrei, then the Gemara continues, if God wouldn't help the Yetzer Tov, lo yuchalei, he would never be able to overcome the Yetzer Hara. Shenemar, Hashem lo yazvenu biyodei, God will not let the evil conquer the Yetzer Tov. Okay, and that's exactly what the pasuk is saying here. You go see how powerful the Yetzer Hara is. Because when you have a battle between man and beast, I don't mean man and a fly. A man and an ox, the ox is stronger than a person, that we know. The Yetzer Tov is a person. The Yetzer Hara is nefesh habahamis habehemah. It's a short. I'm sure it could be a chamor, it could be different levels of a yetzer hara. Yeah? You can have a yetzer hara that's called a shur, that gores, likes to hurt people. You can have another yetzer hara that's called a chamor. Chamor, the Gemara says, chamor betkuf is tamuz kredoli. A donkey, even in Tammuz, when it's summer, hot, he's always cold. A donkey is always cold. Then you can have a tzain, a sheep. Sheep is, you know, I don't hurt you, don't bother me, live and let live. Let me eat and drink and enjoy my life, let me have a good time. I don't bother you, don't bother me. So you have different types of yetzer haras. But the bottom line is, when there's a battle between a person and an animal, the animal is stronger. So the pasuk is saying, the only way the Jew can overcome the yetzer hara, the Gemara says, is Hashem lo yazvenu biyodei means God doesn't allow the Yetzer Hara to win. 1 minute. Therefore, when the person fights, he has this additional power from Hashem to be able, oh, just like in battle. Even though the Goyish army is stronger and more horses and everything, but it says by Hashem they're all the same. What?
Is that something that a person senses in a certain way, like if a person's in a situation and
I don't know exactly what you mean. What do they? What are they sensing?
Are they sensing that Hashem is helping them get out of it? Like Hashem is pushing them in a way to be triumphant, so to speak? Does a person sense that?
He senses it if they come to do it. There's a Gemara that says, the Rebbe quotes this Gemara many times, Haba letaher misayin eisei. A person who comes to purify themselves, God helps him. See you are, God helps him. The Rebbe said, the Gemara doesn't say, one who purifies himself, God helps him. It's not what the Gemara says. The Gemara says, Habala tired. He's just coming to become purified. He's not even there yet. He's just coming to become purified. So already some shit sees, you're trying hard, I will help you do it. When a person really wants to overcome the Yetzer Hara, they could do it. But we all know a person does have self-control. But you have to want to have self-control. Correct? If you don't want to have self-control, you won't. Right? So if a person wants, they could overcome it. But l'chayda, if you think about it, Nefesh HaBahamis is stronger, the Yetzer Hara is stronger than the Yetzer Tov. So how do they do it? Because Hashem helps us. So when you're doing it and you see that you're successful in conquering the Yetzer Hara, it's because Hashem is helping you. And you could feel that, because otherwise you say, 1 minute, there's no way I can overcome the Nefesh HaBahamis, it's stronger than me. I'm only doing it because Hashem is helping me. Because the attitude has to be Ali Vecha, right? Another thing it also says like this, Ki Seite LeMochama. Again, physically, yeah, you have to go out to fight a war. But what is the Torah saying when you go out to battle? You can't wait for the Yetzer Hara to come to you and then start fighting it. You have to be aggressive. As they say in sports, the best defense is offense. When you're going on the offense, that's the best possible defense, right? In football, basketball, whatever game, baseball, I mean, whatever the game is.
You know so much.
Oh, I know so much. Yeah, what can I do? The best offense is defense. The best defense is offense. So the Torah says, If you want to overcome the Yetzer Hara, go out first. Don't wait until he comes to you. Go out and ambush him first, so to speak. And if it's Alivecha, and then it says, don't get scared from him, because Hashem Elokecha Imo, God is with you. Hamalchum Eretz Yisrael that took you out of Egypt. Okay, so it says like this. Next pasuk. Will be when you come to close to the battle. Okay. The Kohen comes and makes a speech. And the Gemara learns out that it has to be Beloshen Kedish. He speaks in Hebrew. Okay? By the way, when you go to Mechama means when you're going out of the boundaries of your city, of your country, to go to war, that's when they give the king. And there's a Kohen, it was called Kohen Mashuach. There was a Kohen that was anointed, La Muhammad, just to give the pep talks for war. He wasn't a Kohen, he was a Kohen, but he was anointed specially to give the pep talks for war. And he says like this, Vama Alem, this is what he says to them. Shema Yisrael, Atam Kevim Ayem La Muhammad. Hear Eden. Listen, Jews. Today you're coming close to Muhammad, Ali Vechem on your enemies. Al Yerech Levavchem. Don't be faint. I mean, your heart should not be faint. Al tiru, don't be afraid. Al tachbezu, don't panic. Al tartzu mipnem, don't be broken before them. Because the Gemara says, the Gemara in Seit explaining all these psukim, the Gemara says, the beginning of downfall is fear. It says the first thing is don't be afraid of them. But it's a very interesting story. The Gemara says, I mean, the pasuk says Shema Yisrael, yeah? So Rashi quotes from the Gemara, by the way, in Saita, that even the Kohen gives him the pep talk, he says, just by saying Shema Yisrael, that itself is enough of a merit to win the war. That's why he says Shema Yisrael. And the Gemara tells an interesting story. When Goliath, or as they call it, David and Goliath, when Goliath came to fight the Jews, and finally David HaMelech went, and okay, so the Gemara says, I mean the pasuk says, and the Gemara brings it down, Goliath came 40 days, morning and evening. And he says, hey, send somebody to fight me. 40 days he was doing this. Morning and evening. So the Gemara says, why did Goliath come morning and evening? Because by coming morning and evening, he wanted the Jews to be so scared they wouldn't read the Shema in the morning and the evening. That's why he came in the morning and the evening to stop the Jews, you know, because they were scared. This massive, overgrown, whatever it was, they would be scared. And the Gemara says he came especially twice a day to stop them from reading the Shema at that time, because they knew that in the merit of Shema Yisrael, they would win the war. And finally David went and knocked them off. Rashi over here says another interesting thing. He says that the person he brings it down here in the bottom, he says, Rashi quoting the Medrash Tel Chuma, that this chapter juxtaposed with the one that teaches adherence to honesty, to teach that if Jews deal fairly with one another, they need not fear hostile enemies. In other words, if you behave bein adam lechaveiroi, then there's no problem of fearing the enemies. That Hashem takes care of it, and this is the Shema Yisrael. In the merit of Shema Yisrol, Adam gave him a mechama ali veichem, don't be afraid. And he says the next pasuk dalid, Kashem alekeichem aheilichem lochem, because God was going with you, lilochem lochem, to fight for you, imay veichem, with your enemies, leshia eschem, to save you. And here it's interesting, here it doesn't say ali veichem, when it speaks about Hashem, it says imay veichem, with the enemies. By the way, I just want to mention one thing, this merit of Shema Yisrael, the Mefarshim discussed, but he brings it down also, why is the merit of Shema Yisrael good to get the enemies killed? So the lot of Mefarshim say, it doesn't mean Shema Yisrael, it means the tefillin that you say Shema Yisrael in. Because we learned there's a pasuk before that says, "Vero kol ami haaretz ki shem Hashem nikra lecha v'yaru mimeka," that all the nations of the world will see that the name of God is called upon you, and they'll be afraid of you. And the Gemara says, "Amar Rabbi Lazar, elu tefillin shebarosh." What does it mean they'll see the name of God on you? Where they're going to see the name of God on you? So it says, when the Jews wear tefillin, and there's a shin on both sides of the tefillin, right? The shin, the stands for shin dalet yud. So the Gemara says that when the goyim see that the name of God is called upon the Jewish people, they're all afraid of the people. And therefore it means, the Shema Yisrael means actually the schutz of tefillin that you wear at Shema Yisrael. But it's interesting because the pasuk says, though, the Gemara's expression, every word in Gemara is exact. The Gemara says, "Elu tefillin sheberosh." You don't put tefillin in the head; you put tefillin on the head. So the Gemara should have said, "Elu tefillin al harosh," not "Elu tefillin sheberosh." Sheberosh means in the head. So explanation: Mepharshim explain that when you wear tefillin, binding your mind and heart to God, yeah, tefillin you wear on top, but you can't wear it inside your brain, right? But it's supposed to permeate and penetrate the brain. So the tefillin, Shabbat, the name of God, the Shema Yisrael, and all the other parashiyos that are in the tefillin, when they see that the Jews are affected by it internally, it, Shabbat, in the brain, is this level of tefillin that causes fear amongst all the goyim of the world. So when the Jews are one with Hashem, they say Shema Yisrael, they're one with Hashem, so then the Hashem says, the pep talk of the Kain, Meshuach Muhammad, says, you know what, you have nothing to be afraid of, because nothing to be afraid of.
And Rabbi, when a person wears tefillin and they're not in the same area, like in other words, like in America. And
so the Rebbe said, from the Gemara comes out, that any Jew wearing any tefillin anywhere in the world has an influence. That's what the Rebbe said before the Six-Day War. When the Rebbe came out with the tefillin campaign, started before the Six-Day War. When the Rebbe came out with Miftzah tefillin, so he said then, no matter where a Jew wears tefillin, any part of the world, because it's a spiritual thing, so it doesn't have to be dafka in that place.
It helps,
it helps everybody.
It could help even in future generations.
Yeah, everything. By the way, just one more thing, it's late. Kiseitze le Mochama is singular. They bring down the Al-Sheikh says, why is it called singular? Kiseitzu. The Jewish people are plural, not one. He says, because that if the Jews are united, then they win over the enemy. It has to be Seite, it has to be united, and then they win.